I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Ahead of Thanksgiving and grocery shopping for it, we take a look at the supermarket business. Walmart, which sells groceries and just about everything else, lowered its earnings forecast again after 6 months of flat or declining sales. Is the retail giant losing ground to traditional and independent grocers? Jeff Metzger of Columbia-based Food Trade News has some thoughts to share about Walmart and the regional supermarket scene, including how stores are competing to attract millennials. Also, is shopping with your kids a health hazard? A study in Southwest Baltimore found that children have a lot of influence over what makes it into the shopping cart, and the items they're asking for aren't exactly health foods. That's Midday, coming up after the news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks with you here on WYPR, WYPF, WYPO, and streaming online through WYPR.org. We thank you again for making Midday part of your day. With just a week or so ago to go to Thanksgiving, actually we're headed toward the Thanksgiving shopping weekend, big grocery shopping weekend, so we thought we'd talk about grocery shopping in this hour, supermarkets in our region, the latest news, because we always enjoy having Jeff Metzger join us. Jeff is president of the Columbia-based Bestmart Publishing Company. That's the publisher of Food Trade News, Food World, and the Mid-Atlantic Grocery Industry Directory. And Jeff's been on the show a couple of times to talk about Maryland's supermarket scene, the whole scene in the Mid-Atlantic, actually. So, Jeff, nice to have you back with us today.
Thanks, Dan.
One of the things we're going to be talking with Jeff about, among others, is Walmart, the retail behemoth Walmart, which was, an 800-pound gorilla. Now might just be a sort of 700 or 600-pound gorilla. We're not sure, but it's lowered its earnings forecast after six consecutive months of flat or declining sales and only a marginal increase in net income. It also canceled plans for a couple of super centers here in Maryland, and when we get a chance to talk to Jeff, we'll be talking about that. Up front, though, Jeff, I want to say hello to Pamela Sirkan, who teaches research methodology for the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. She was the leader of a study that was done about grocery shopping and kids. Pamela, thank you for joining us here on Midday, Pamela. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this study, you conducted a study in Southwest Baltimore at a particular supermarket, but what was your objective in the study?
So the objective of the main study was to figure out why people made choices and make the choices that they make in terms of buying healthy or unhealthy items in the supermarket. And so, and because we wanted to do an intervention, which we did in the supermarket to try to promote healthy purchasing. So before we did that, we did the study that sort of a formative research study with using qualitative methods to ask people about why they make the purchases that they do. And one thing that we found was that kids influence grocery purchasing a lot in the supermarket.
Yeah, and kids of a certain age, was there a specific age group you could talk about with children having the most influence?
Yeah, so we had caregivers with children under the age of 16. That was sort of the eligibility criteria to be in the study. And then they had to be people shopping at this large supermarket in Southwest Baltimore. So we have an age range from basically infants up until age 15. And a lot of people had multiple kids in that age range.
Okay. And you focused your study on the Food Depot out on Frederick Avenue, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Jeff, I've been out the Food Depot. That's a nice store. Who owns that store?
It's owned by...
Yeah, so Benji Green.
Oh, good.
And it was
good. Jeff is... Pamela,
the idea for the...
Excuse me, Pamela. Pamela, can you hear Jeff Metzger?
Hi, Pamela.
No, I can't hear him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. But Jeff is here in the studio with us, sharing the conversation. So I just asked him who the owner is. The Green family, right?
Yes, Benji Green and some associates, and a very well-run store.
Okay. So, Pamela, back to you then. I'm sorry. You conducted your surveys there.
Yeah, and actually the Benji Green and the Green Associates were really interested in promoting healthy eating in the store and in the neighborhood. It was sort of initiated by them. So
I'm curious, how did parents react when you asked them questions or conducted your survey? Do parents see this as a problem?
Yeah, so what parents ended up telling us mostly is that they were often influenced to buy unhealthy products that they wouldn't have wanted to buy or they didn't intend to buy because they had their kids with them, because their kids were asking for them or crying or negotiating or were going to have a temper tantrum or something like that in the store. So instead of getting what they might have rather wanted to purchase, they would kind of give in and get the chips or get the sometimes junk foods.
This is a familiar story, I think, to lots of parents, wherever they are, who go shopping with small children. Now, let me ask you this. When you get around to the word intervention or the idea of suggesting healthier purchases for parents, I'm gonna guess that some are reluctant to do that because they just don't know whether the child will eat the food.
Yeah, and that's actually an important point that came out through our interviews, too, that people, especially people on a limited budget, they were afraid to buy something that their kids might not eat, and then the money would go to waste, and the food would go to waste, and they didn't want to risk doing that. So so one thing they actually suggested was to have sort of taste tests in the store or ways that kids could interact with the foods to get to know foods that they weren't sure that they would like.
You know, years ago, supermarkets, Jeff, started using those checkout lines, you know, where there was no candy, so parents weren't stuck in a checkout line with a kid who's reaching for Reese's peanut cups and is crying if he or she doesn't get them. But it's kind of hard to carry that out through the whole store, isn't it?
You know, I think the industry means well, but at the end of the day, it's the consumer's choice, and I think, as Pam pointed out, if you've got a couple of kids and it's kind of a high-stress situation, oftentimes they will capitulate and say, okay, we'll get you the Reese's cups and we'll get through this. I do think there has been some improvement in those areas, but it's very difficult for the supermarket chain, other than offering alternative choices, to force consumers to buy healthier foods automatically.
Mm-hmm. Now, Pam, the reason you work on this, Pamela Serkin, you're at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, but you're also part of the Global Obesity Prevention Center over there that we've heard a lot about.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to say in response to the last comment was one thing that we thought of doing as part of the intervention was to have an aisle that was designated for kids that would not have sort of the junk foods as you go through the checkout, so that parents who have kids with them could opt for that that option. And we worked on that a little bit, but ultimately that didn't really get it underway in terms of being part of our actual intervention.
Can you talk about the idea of taste tests? Taste tests sounds like a good idea, at least for... you know, for a while, to at least try it out in a store like for Food Depot. Is Food Depot interested in doing that?
Yeah, and so this is something that we implemented in the store and that I think they're still doing now, and to give kids and parents a chance to try healthier foods and so they don't have to risk, like I said before, buying things that might go to waste.
What do you think you're going to do with this? Are you going to go back and actually, is Food Depot willing to try something like taste tests and also different placements of items?
Yeah, so we actually, you know, there's a big lag in terms of when research gets done and then when it comes out. And this was the sort of formative research to intervention study that we did actually in 2012 in Food Depot, where we had all of those components. We had put up labels and special store displays and did community outreach and did taste tests and had some trainings for the employees there, and then compared that to compared the sales actually in that Food Depot with another Food Depot in Baltimore.
Let me read you a comment on Facebook from one of our listeners, Katie, who says, I actually think this is one of the things I got right as a parent. Although it is a hassle, I think it is good for kids to go to the grocery store with their parents, maybe not every trip. I let them, my two boys, pick out their cookies, no trans fats, she says, and their cereal from an approved, not healthy but not horrible selection, she says. We never from day one let any of us purchase things from the checkout aisle, candy, gum, etc. We told them it was for looking only, so we never had an aisle fight. What do you think of the idea of letting children pick out one or two items right off the bat, knowing that, you know, they're going to the store with their parent and that they will have a choice?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. It sounds like she's doing the right thing and gotten it so she's able to supervise that they're picking out healthier things, that they kind of know those are the rules at the store. I have small children myself. I should probably try to do the same thing.
Well, Pamela, thank you very much. And maybe we'll get back to you when you work on the second part of this.
Yeah, that would be great. We're in the process of analyzing the data now. So I'll let you know.
Thank you very much. Pamela Sirkan from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and their Global Obesity Prevention Center, talking about the study they did in Southwest Baltimore at Food Depot on the influence kids have on parents when it comes to buying groceries there, and a lot of unhealthy things get put in the shopping cart. Well, what do you do about that? You know, I get one thing you do is you bring education to people to the supermarket and let them know that there are alternatives. There are things that you can do to avoid these aisle fights.
Yeah, I think education is the primer for all of this. That we need to be better educated about what we put in our bodies, not something exciting or new, but as the health problems, public health problems continue, particularly obesity, I think I think consumers need to be informed. I had a sort of a rhetorical question for Pam.
Is she still there? Or did we say goodbye to her? You can ask me.
well, I was wondering if she would have conducted the survey in a different location with a different demographic, let's say Eddie's on Roland Avenue or the new Harris Teeter in Canton, would the results have been different?
That's more than a rhetorical question. It's a good question. Pam, you still there?
Well, I just came back on, so I missed the beginning of your question. If it were done in a different location,
yeah,
would the results be the same?
Yeah, a different demographic, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of think that they would, because I feel like this resonates with a lot of parents with small children, especially, you know, a lot of the things that we found. And interestingly, I think maybe it has a bigger impact on you know, this population, because a lot of the people who shop there are on food stamps and on a really tight budget. So to buy the extra, you know, to give in to your kid and buy the junk food or whatever unhealthier food that they want, sometimes it's a trade-off for what you would have liked to have bought, whereas for a higher, somebody who has more disposable income, that might not be such an issue.
All right,
they can get both.
Thank you very much again. Okay, Pamela Sirkin from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. The study found that parents want to avoid tantrums and give in to demands. Sometimes they wait. Some caregivers say they wait, Jeff, and then take items out of the cart when the kids aren't looking. And parents would rather stick to healthy choices overall. That's what the study found. So you can find more information about that on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. Before we go to this break, have you noticed that supermarkets giving more cooking demonstrations by any chance? I've wondered about this ever since this conversation started about food deserts and returning supermarkets to city areas, urban areas, where there have been none for decades, right? you put the food out there, you put healthy food choices out there, fresh fish, meats, produce, obviously. But then you have to kind of teach people what to do with it, right? That's a big issue.
I think sampling and in-store demonstrations have become very big because obviously they're selling tools, but it's also a way for more traditional grocery stores to separate themselves from the myriad of other types of competitors that wouldn't offer that type of thing. So if you looked at a Walmart or a Target or a Costco, all people selling essentially the same items as a traditional grocery store, they're not going to do. I should take Costco out of the table because they do a lot of in-store demos, mm-hmm. but certainly the mass merchants and the drug chains that are have ramped up the quantity of food, they're not offering those in-store samplings. And grocery stores have found a forum and a unique platform to draw more traffic, create more interest.
Jeff Metzger with us from Food World and Food Trade News. He's the publisher of those journals based here in Columbia in Maryland. 410-662-8780 as we talk about supermarket trends, supermarket news, and grocery shopping here. As always, we welcome phone calls with questions for Jeff. We're going to talk about Walmart when we get back and some of the other chains in our region. 410-662-8780. Are you loyal to a specific store? Have you lost your loyalty to a specific store? Do you shop around now? Have you found a new store you really like? Please feel free to share your comments or questions with us. 410-662-8780. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's with Jeff Metzger from Food World and Food Trade News. Is Taking Stock the name of your column?
It is my column. I've been writing it for a lot of years.
Yeah. My eye went to this Taking Stock in September, a piece you had in September about Walmart. Walmart losing heft down to 600-pound gorilla from the original 800 pounds or even bigger. And I was struck by this. Walmart had planned two more supercenters, one in Oxon Hill, which is down in Prince George's County, and one in Aspen Hill in Montgomery County. And then they canceled those plans. So we'll start there and talk a little bit about Walmart as a player in the food business specifically, since that's what we're talking about today. Well, what did that signal to you? They're deciding to cancel those two supercenters.
They got tired of the fight with either consumer groups or local governments, and at the end of the day, they pulled back.
Is it as simple as that?
I mean, they're very
because
tenacious.
They've been through these fights before,
yeah,
right?
They're very tenacious, and they'll hang on. And we have some, in our publication, we've had some sites that have been listed for 10 years that Walmart is still pursuing, even though there may be local resistance, environmental issues. Walmart is very steely and tenacious. Apparently, these two locations, it wasn't worth the fight.
Okay. But when it comes to the food business in particular, it's not like the chains have folded up and disappeared in the face of the competition from Walmart.
Now, I think a lot of the competing retailers have learned how to defend themselves to some degree against Walmart when Walmart started to emerge in the Mid-Atlantic 20 years ago by converting a lot of their stores to supercenters or building new supercenter combo units. A certain level of retailer, those that hadn't faced that kind of competition, particularly price-oriented, just kind of rolled over and died. Those that remained have figured out how to compete with Walmart, usually not matching them price for price, but providing ancillary services and options that Walmart can't.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned in here a 11% reduction in SNAP benefits nationwide.
That's correct. That was just about a year ago, and this continues to be a battle in Washington. Food assistance benefits, food stamps, if you will, were reduced an average of 11% and clearly affected the lower middle and lower demographics. Their food spend, their monthly food spend was reduced.
Does this mean that we'll see less of Walmart competing for as a grocer?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I think they've shifted their focus. They're building fewer super centers, these 120 to 215,000 square foot monster stores. And although they're not in this market yet, nationally they're building more neighborhood markets, which are their smaller format, about 40,000 square feet.
Are we seeing those in Maryland, Jeff?
Not yet, but they're coming, and we're seeing them in Virginia, Pennsylvania. Most of the growth has come in the southeast, southwest, but Walmart has stated they have plans to double the size of the neighborhood market banner in the next 3 years, and they certainly will be coming to Maryland.
What's your general survey of the supermarket scene in our region here, Baltimore? I mean, Baltimore, Washington, specifically Baltimore region. What would you say about what adjectives would you use to describe it here toward the end of 2014?
If you're in the business, you'd probably say overstored. If you're a consumer, wow, look at all these shopping options.
Right. Right. Lots of choices. 410-662-8780. The new players, who's growing? Is Aldi's growing?
Aldi's growing. Aldi's done a tremendous job, in my opinion, of segregating and attracting the price-oriented shopper. They've done a magnificent job. Privately held company, lots of cash, and very ambitious. Not quite national, but growing nationally, growing toward national base in the next 3 to 5 years. Aldi is a formidable player.
You know, you heard me ask that question about loyalty, and I wonder where that is today. You know, people got used to going to a certain store, maybe their neighborhood store, maybe they live near a supermarket and they just go there because it's convenient or it's habit. But I mean, is loyalty still something that's in the equation when marketers look at the supermarket scene and how they market to customers?
Loyalty is hanging on by a thread.
Thread?
Yes.
Really?
I think with all the options out there and a changing changing generational issues, that how you and I viewed loyalty, it was the local supermarket in the local area, and loyalty was also loyalty also encompassed convenience. I think with the millennials and Gen Ys, who are the up-and-coming shoppers, with all these choices, they don't mind going to three or four destinations to get what they want.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Metzger is our guest from Food World and Food Trade News, 410-662-8780, his company, bestmet.com. You can see all the publications on their website. Jeff, what is Giant Eagle? I have an email here from Alice in Frederick who says that the Giant Eagle in her area offers in-store daycare. They have toys and videos and games, and it's smart of them as a company because my son used to beg me to go to Giant Eagle, and I was relieved of having him distracted while I was shopping. What is Giant? I haven't heard of Giant Eagle.
They're the leading supermarket chain in the Pittsburgh area, and they have a few stores. They have a couple of stores in Frederick County. And this is something we've seen on a select basis. Again, supermarkets trying to create separation, make their customers feel better, something that the not only other supermarkets typically don't offer, but certainly the all other channels that are encroaching on traditional supermarkets don't have either.
Let's take some phone calls for Jeff. Jennifer, on the subject of Walmart and shopping there for groceries, welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thanks. Hi, Jeff and Dan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, this is a poignant conversation. I was recently at our local Walmart and trying to do some grocery shopping and really becoming dismayed by the lack of healthy food options, low-fat, low-cal, completely lacking in organic options. And in general, it appears to me that Walmart seemed to pop up in areas of and this is not a general, general rule, but in areas of lower socioeconomic opportunities. And it just seems that they're kind of dictating the choices for a lot of consumers in these areas. And, it's just a little frustrating. And I was wondering about your thoughts on that as far as the socioeconomic impact of the lack of healthy food choices in some of these supermarkets.
Well, a couple of things about Walmart. In the last 6 months, they have added the Wild Oats line of natural and organic foods. Wild Oats was a natural organics retailer, similar to Whole Foods. Actually, Whole Foods ended up buying a portion of that business, and the label still existed, and Walmart made a big statement that they are, and that they have begun offering healthy options at their stores. And I think Walmart also is sort of an equal opportunity locator. Certainly, they are in lower middle socioeconomic areas, but they're also in locations that you would consider middle and upper middle as well. They are the largest grocery chain in America, even though the government doesn't categorize them as a grocery chain. They are by far the largest seller of retail food in the U.S.
What percentage of the market do they have? Do you know?
Those figures are a little ambiguous. I would say probably maybe 20%, 15 to 20% nationally. They're in every market. They're global. They're a $500 billion organization.
We know, but you, the point you're making in this piece that I mentioned here about the 600-pound gorilla, you're not saying it's losing weight fast. You're just saying you're not saying it's jumped the shark either. You're just saying. What are you saying? That it's maybe other retailers just aren't afraid to compete with them?
That's that, part of it. I think they've been neutralized to some degree. I think they've been penalized, or they've penalized themselves by having generally inferior options on the perishable side of the business, or at least that is the perception in terms of meat and produce particularly. So they're still King Kong, but... they've lost a little weight.
Hey, I want to ask you about another store that just came on my radar this past year, G-Mart. G-Mart took the place of Santoni's. Santoni's closed on the east side of Baltimore in Highlandtown. A few months later, we hear about G-Mart, and I can't find a whole lot of information about this company on the internet. The website is sort of unconstructed, deconstructed. There isn't a lot of information there. I know they have locations in Atlanta, maybe, now one in Baltimore. They had one in Frederick that closed. That's all I know about it. And I know that it caters largely to, well, I guess the intent is to cater to Hispanic and Asian families. Is that right?
That's correct. And if you look at the demographics in Highlandtown and how it's evolved over the last 20 years, a Hispanic retailer was probably needed. And we're seeing this in pockets everywhere. I live in Ellicott City. There's a Lottie Plaza there. There's soon to be, we hear, an H-Mart. And
another H-Mart in Ellicott City. There's an H-Mart in Catonsville now.
And Ellicott City is sort of the bullseye of the target in terms of having a large Korean population. Mm-hmm. And again, this is where the entrepreneurialism is coming from in the grocery business, because a lot of the activity is dominated now by large chains.
Do you know anything about G-Mart? Anything else you can tell us about
it? Not a whole lot, other than they have, they're clearly targeting their audience in Highlandtown, which is Hispanic primarily.
Well, I like the store. I thought the produce selection was good. I thought the meat and seafood was excellent, at least for my taste. And fresh, a lot of fresh meats there. The store is a little crowded. You see this every place now. Supermarkets where they have a nice wide aisle that's now a narrow aisle because there are pallets of things stacked up in the middle of them. Boy, I see that almost everywhere.
Yeah, the industry calls it densing up.
Densing up.
As these inner city or close to inner city locations are cropping up, they're usually taken over by entrepreneurial retailers, independents, many with ethnic or specialty bents, and you're not going to expand. So if your store is 25,000, 30,000 square feet, you got to get it all in there, and that's
stuck.
Typically how it's done.
Jeff, here's another call in Catonsville. The caller is Kathy. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I shop at Walmart, and I try to buy the organic and the cool stuff to encourage them, but their vegetable selection is terrible and you know, just not good quality. Living in Catonsville, I think a lot of people know about H-Mart and Latte in Catonsville on the west side, but on the east side, we just got a GW supermarket, which is Chinese. And it's fabulous produce, cheap, a lot of selection of healthy food, and actually what you guys were talking about, out. Right, it's right over the border into Catonsville. So you've got a large, kind of lower SES African American community, and I'm kind of curious if they're going to take advantage of that.
I would say in areas, and I'm not familiar with GW, but I would say in areas, again, more urban, more densely populated, convenience is still a big factor. So if they're offering the right mix of products, certainly they're going to get African American shoppers attracted to their location. It is ultimately, at the end of the day, about product quality and price and the overall impression the consumer has about that store. There's still some intangible magic working.
Jeff, here's an email from Bob. He says, when Superfresh quit the Baltimore market, ShopRite, a New Jersey chain, bought several of their stores. They are very competitive, and some of their specials are excellent. He's talking here about ShopRite. They are part of a supply chain co-op that allows them to pass on savings to customers.
ShopRite, and it is a bunch of about 50 families that own multiple locations, close to 300, really from New England now down through Virginia. And they are the number one player in both the New York area, metro New York area, and Philadelphia. They actually arrived in Maryland prior to the Superfresh auction. They've been looking to build a customer base here. They've done a good job. It's slow going. It's tough to find locations. The business is very competitive. When you figure that a new store can cost between $15 and $25 million to build, a little less if you're buying another location. But it's an expensive proposition. It's still a low-margin business. And unless you make an acquisition, you don't build 20 stores in 1 year.
It sounds like that's a unique model, though, this co-op idea of purchasing.
A little bit unique. The fact that it's really owned by a bunch of independent retailers. But the stores run pretty much like a traditional grocery store. They're just very good at store operations and execution.
Jeff Metzger with us from Food World and Food Trade News. If you have a comment or question about shopping, the supermarket trends in our region as we head for the big shopping weekend before Thanksgiving, please give us a ring. I'm very curious about whether you've changed your habits or discovered a new store or settled down at a place that you didn't think you'd shop before or something you've discovered. Please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Our email address for questions or comments that way, midday@wypr.org. I have a question for you, Jeff, about growth. How much growth does... How does this work with Walmart? They have all these stores now already, right? So is growth measured by... Can't growth simply be measured by the amount of sales in each of those stores that currently exist? Or is growth measured by how many new stores you open? And how many more stores can you open?
Both. I think one of the metrics that, from a business perspective, that the analysts observe is what's called same-store sales, identical-store sales. So how is your store, this particular store, doing sales-wise versus a year ago? That's a critical measure of trending up or trending down. Obviously, Walmart does not, all their growth is organic, no acquisitions of any real note. So they are constantly looking, and they have a huge real estate department, for new locations. And those could be the old-fashioned, what Walmart calls Division One, the conventional standalone without a lot of food. Or the Supercenter model, which used to be mammoth. Now it's a little smaller to still mammoth. There's a wider range. And as we talked about before, neighborhood markets. So growth is really, really critical.
Those neighborhood markets, which I guess we haven't seen yet.
That's correct.
Are we going to see them in the city of Baltimore? Is that possible?
It's definitely possible. I think they're slowly moving both... into the Northeast and on the West Coast.
You know, if they did something like that, they might be better received. They might not have that NIMBY opposition that they face, especially when they come into city neighborhoods.
Yeah, from a location point of view, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to ask you about a segment of the market. We mentioned Aldi's. There's also Save-A-Lot and Price Right, which we put in the sort of same segment of the supermarket scene. Is that right?
Yeah, the industry calls that segment extreme value. It is about price, and it is not unusual to see one of those three banners utilized in a so-called food desert area.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stores are on the smallish side. Most of the merchandise is private label, and at the end of the day, it's all about price.
Speaking of private label, this observation I made at the Aldi's in East Baltimore over the weekend, Millville is a brand of cereal, right? I think it's produced in the Midwest. Well, as a lot of cereal, I guess. But anyway, one thing I noticed about it was on the shelf placed next to General Mills products, with the design of the cereal boxes the same color, almost the same font, with a slightly different name, not Cheerios, but something very similar to it. And I was surprised at how similar it looked. And I guess you can get away with that because it's not the same name.
Right. Legally, that is allowed.
And
that
it's not the same name.
That's an old practice. You'll not only see that.
Well, this was very close.
At an Aldi. You'll see that at conventional supermarket chains. But with Aldi, they want to measure up strictly on price. And hopefully the quality aspect measures up too, so the consumer returns to buy that product.
Here's a comment from Ken by email on Wegmans. He says, a new Wegmans is in the process of being built in Owings Mills, and my wife and I are very excited. We've already decided we are willing to drive the 20 minutes out of the way just to get our groceries there. Their selection is just so much better than my local grocer. Wegmans, let's see, a new one in Owings Mills. There's another Wegmans anyway. They're very careful about how quickly they expand, it seems to me.
Well, they're family-owned. So they have a capacity issue. They can't really open more than two or three a year. They have several others in the pipeline. Owings Mills, to my knowledge, is the only one in the Baltimore area. And we found they kind of like to triangulate their locations. So they have Bel Air, and then they have Hunt Valley, Owings Mills, Columbia, Gambrills, which is Anne Arundel County. So they've almost been using that 15-mile marker as a location finder, and they're doing extremely well.
A similar store, I call it similar because it just looks and feels the same when you walk into it, is Harris Teeter. Now, Harris Teeter opened in South Baltimore or Locust Point, and then they opened one in Canton Crossing in Southeast Baltimore. Are we going to see more Harris Teeter? There's also a Harris Teeter out in Columbia, right?
There's a Harris Teeter in Columbia. So far, Baltimore has not been a fast-paced growth market for Harris Teeter. They actually concentrated more on the D.C. market. They've got, about 40 stores in Maryland, suburban Maryland, Northern Virginia, D.C. proper.
Wow, I had no idea.
Really. Yeah. I think they like the urban model, the upscale urban model. And there's opportunities in the Baltimore area. I think it's just a priority situation.
Let's take another call for Jeff Metzger here on Midday. Robert in Baltimore, welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Okay,
well, I've mostly been in Baltimore the last 30-some years, and I took a project down on the eastern shore of Virginia. And there were two options there. One was the Walmart Megastore, and one was the Food Lion. And I went into the Walmart at the urging of my buddy who I was helping out, and I didn't have a good shopping experience. The vegetables, as the lady said earlier, were a little substandard. So the next time I went shopping, I went over to check out the Food Lion. I became a Food Lion fan down there.
Hmm.
And it wasn't just the product line that they had, but the help. Everybody behind the counter, at the checkout, the roving store manager, all very helpful people. And I think that's an important part, that personal association when you're dealing with what is, reasonably still a big box store.
Right.
Food Lion's everywhere. Not so much in Maryland, but, it's a large group of people.
The customer service.
Yeah. 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 The customer service as well as the product line and the experience of walking the aisles. I don't know if they were, I don't know. It was how they were arranged. The aisles were long, like you find in the Giant, full of, they had Hispanic foods, which, you know, I'm not Hispanic, but I lived with some Hispanics, and I still love some beans and rice and tortillas. I just had a much better experience there.
Robert, we appreciate your comments. Food Lion has got some presence in Maryland. It's mostly to the south of us, is it?
Yeah, they're based in North Carolina, but they are the largest retailer on the Eastern Shore. And typically on the Eastern Shore, you're kind of limited. It's the 40,000-square-foot traditional supermarket-looking Food Lion and a bunch of Walmarts. There are other players there, but the towns typically are small, and Walmart draws from a big distance. So nobody's really been encouraged to open up a bunch of new stores on the Eastern Shore.
We asked on Twitter, where do you shop for groceries and why? And one of our listeners, Tim, said, usually Mars, simply to boycott the whole bonus card system. And this is reflected in a comment from Joanne, who writes us to say, my favorite market is Mars. They don't play the member game. They have the same price for everyone. Their vegetables are conveniently packaged, so you can pick up small amounts at a time. I don't have to repackage items when I get home. Their meat prices are always good. The service is terrific and personal. The only thing I don't like is their fresh baked bread selection. Well, I guess you can't have everything. But that bonus card thing, that member card, discount card thing, you know, a lot of us play that game, right?
Yeah, it's a marketing tool. It's a it's a shopping incentive tool. It's also an opportunity for those retailers that deploy the card to gather data, mine the data, ultimately utilize it in a way that you can offer rewards or specials to those members when they collect data about that particular shopper.
H. Mart in Catonsville is amazing, says Stephanie. They have more than 10 items, 10 times the selection of fresh produce than a Giant or Safeway. Their produce section is kind of amazing. I agree with that. You don't just get a couple of varieties of some vegetable. You get a huge variety, like over a dozen types of peppers or eggplants. You get all their fresh herbs, stuff you've never heard of, and that's true. It is sort of an experience to walk in there. It's
kind of like a farmer's market.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, from all over the world, a global farmer's market. Sherry in Bel Air, we'll go to you next. Hi.
Hi, this is Sherry. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I was going to speak about, you were recently speaking on the ShopRites in Bel Air. We have them. You were saying that there aren't any, you didn't think, in the area. Actually, Harford County has, I think, 4, maybe 5 of them, like Bel Air, Abingdon, Bell Camp area.
Those were the former Klein stores. That was actually the first ShopRite entry. They used to be called Klein's Family Markets. They converted about 5 years ago to the ShopRite banner, and that was sort of the foundation of ShopRite getting into the Baltimore market.
I'm sure you heard about the vote of the Baltimore City Council just a week ago today on plastic bags, a ban of plastic shopping bags, single-use shopping bags. And we've had quite a discussion about it here on this air and also in social media. Been a lot of talk about it. People have a lot to say on this subject. So, and there's the California ban that we reported on Friday. You know, Governor Brown signed a law banning the plastic bags there. Do you have any observations or comments about that in terms of the supermarkets and their relationship to the plastic bag?
You know, plastic bags were brought in as a convenience. Yeah, there was a price element. Plastic is obviously cheaper than paper. I kind of have a one general blanket-fits-all philosophy. I think retailers, those in business that operate stores, need to be as transparent as they can be about all issues. And plastic bags is certainly a hot button. If consumers do not want plastic bags, they should make that choice. Whether the government should be involved or not, I would say, is questionable. But at the end of the day, if there's legislation passed banning plastic bags, or there's a critical element out there saying, we don't want these, they're environmentally questionable or bad, retailers need to listen and adapt to what their customers really want.
And I have a feeling, I've said this, that if you just took them away tomorrow, I think people would adjust. There was life before plastic bags, Jeff. There were paper bags, and people act some. I remember some women in my town, including my mother, who had a cloth bag that they took to the supermarket.
Well, the reusable
IGA.
The reusable bags are becoming in vogue. If you talk to somebody in the industry, they'll say, "We're here to sell stuff, and if the reusable bags are the way to go, we'll go that way." But are those bags always clean? Do consumers make sure they're as clean as possible? I mean, so there's an argument to everything. But to your point, Dan, absolutely. People will adjust. It isn't the same as buying food.
My takeaway from the California story is that if local jurisdictions did this first, like Baltimore or, I don't know, Montgomery County has taken some action already. If the counties were to do it step by step, then you could build momentum for a statewide ban, possibly. At least that's what happened in California. I think a third of California had already... jurisdictions had already banned plastic bags. Let's go to Betty in Towson with some props for Trader Joe's. Hi, Betty.
Hi, yes. I've been shopping at Trader Joe's for about 10 years, and their green grocer section, everything is so fresh you think you just went to the market.
Hmm.
And their employees are so helpful. If they see you keep walking up and down an aisle, one of them will call them over and say, "May I help you?" And you say, "Well, I'm looking for so-and-so." And they say, "Well, that's in the back of the store, and I'm 89. So they go back and get it and bring it up to me. So, you know, I don't know how many Trader Joe's are in the United States, but the one in Towson I just love.
Yeah, we hear a lot of love expressed for Trader Joe's. They're careful about how they expand, too. There were a lot of folks hoping that they would come into Baltimore to the... Rotunda.
First of all, Betty, you should probably know that Aldi, which is a price discounter that Dan mentioned earlier, and Trader Joe's are owned by the same German family. Two different ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And Trader Joe's is a tremendous retailer. I'm not certain you can buy your entire weekly food needs there, but they've done a great job. And from a statistics point of view, they are the largest per square foot volume retailer in America. They do more with a little bit than any other retailer in America.
Speaking of Aldi's, here's a comment from Leslie in Anne Arundel County. Jeff, we drive from Anne Arundel County to Bowie in PG County to go to Aldi. We have had pay cuts over the last few years. So if we did not have Aldi, our food bill would be at least one third higher. Sometimes the produce is not great, but you can usually find something that is good quality. Aldi is great for basics. Once a month, we head over to its affiliated store, Trader Joe's, to buy more esoteric items. That's from Leslie. And quickly, Kurt and Perry Hall, we're down to our last minute or so here. Kurt, go right ahead. Hi.
Hi. Hey, as a food blogger and chef, I'm in grocery stores 3 to 5 times a week and pay a lot of attention to them. I used to shop at Whole Foods a lot more, but I find that Mom's has a lot more organic produce than they do, and it's always the freshest I can find anywhere. Why did Whole Foods decrease the amount of organics, and how can Mom's get the best?
I didn't know they had. By the way, where is Mom's? Mom's is where, Kurt?
It's over there off of York Road in Timonium.
Okay, thank you very much. I didn't know. That's something you want to take a look at, Jeff,
yeah,
since you're in the food news business.
Mom's has done a good job. They've got about a dozen locations, mostly in the D.C. area. They have one in Jessup as well.
If you go to best-met.com, best-met.com, that's the website for Jeff's publications, Food World and Food Trade News. Jeff Metzger, who's the publisher, right? President and publisher.
Whatever.
Yeah, chief columnist.
Chief cook, bottle washer, and I don't babysit anymore.
Jeff, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
And you too.
Yeah. We'll take a break here for a lunch provided today by Rosina Gourmet. Since 1999, Rosina Gourmet has served handmade, locally sourced ingredients located in Canton, downtown Baltimore, and Harbor East.